This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. I say the word cider, and you think, what, a sweet drink that tastes just like fresh apples? Well, how come up until about 80 years ago or so in America, and even in most of the rest of the world today, if you said cider, people would assume you're talking about an alcoholic beverage? Sensing a story here? It turns out, ever since colonial times, apples and apple cider have played a key role in America's history, and that role may be about to change again. Two amateur historians who are professional cider makers, plus a professional historian who now also makes cider, are standing by to fascinate us in the hour ahead in a way you may have never thought possible. But if you also have an apple beverage story to tell, you'll be invited to join in too, right after the news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. Cider and apples are our focus today. And you may already know enough about the fascinating history involved that you right now have something to add to the conversation. If so, please do call us at 888-WMRA-TALK. Or if you, at any time during the hour, have questions, those are welcome too. 888-967-2825. Later in the show, we expect to meet up with a man who graduated from making micro-brewed beer in high school to today, a little more than a decade later, running a successful hard cider operation in Central Virginia. But we begin with a former history professor from Virginia Tech who now serves as operations manager for a family-run apple orchard and cidery, Charlotte Shelton of Albemarle Cider Works. Thank you so very much for making time for us.
Delighted to be here, Tom.
And sitting right across from Dr. Shelton, a man who's been tending to apples most all of his life, and today runs his family farm and cidery in Timberville, Virginia, Shannon Showalter of Showalter's Orchard and Old Hill Hard Cider. Shannon, welcome to the Insight Studios.
Thank you. Excited to be here and talk about apples and cider.
Well, me too. So to either of you, what do you find most significant about the history of apples?
Well, apples, it's hard to overestimate how important apples were in our early history. The first settlers who got here brought with them very little in terms of skills. There were no fields. It was mostly a forested wilderness. But apples are something that you can plant the seeds, and even though they won't come true from seed, every apple, no matter how wretched it might taste, think of crab apples that you only threw at each other when you were kids or
sure.
something, produced juice with sugars that ferment into a palatable beverage. And this is something you can preserve throughout the year. We think of apples and cider as a fall phenomenon in this country, and it's amazing how our sales pick up. But the colonials had it year-round. Cider, proper cider, which I think is such a much friendlier term than hard cider.
Proper cider means I'm going to get a buzz from it.
Proper cider is what our British tourists say when they come into our tasting room and relate that they have been hoodwinked to buy something that was nothing but juice called cider when they first got off the plane.
We're going to agree to disagree from a few points on this.
Well, good. Tell me about the first one, Shannon Showalter.
Well, the term cider itself, we've been producing our sweet cider for a long time, almost 40 years now. And so for us, we had to differentiate. Proper cider would work as well.
But it hard cider.
But we call it hard cider, yes, to differentiate, because our customers do know cider as being a sweet, fresh beverage as well.
So, yeah. Well, Terry Maloney, whom I don't know if you met, he died a couple years ago, but he was down in 2009 visiting us, one of the early proper cider. Gave a talk, and he said he did not like the term hard cider. It sounded so unfriendly. And I rather like that line, but I think we have a way to go before we can get general public acknowledgement of cider being proper cider.
Well, let's get into how we, and since it happened around the time of Prohibition, you listening can probably guess what some of the factors were, but how we in America came to have such a different definition of cider today than colonial times or most of American history, and how the rest of the world defines cider today as an alcoholic beverage. But I'm particularly intrigued in the history that you were talking about, Charlotte Shelton. There have been reports that during colonial times and in fact in the first century or so of this country's existence, people couldn't drink water because the water was so polluted, so they had to drink alcoholic beverages.
Well, I think that goes back to the European antecedents, where populations were much tighter and so forth. Most water in this country was fine. Of course, they did settle in Jamestown initially here in a swamp, so that probably complicated things a little bit. But the presumption that cider or fermented or brewed beverages were healthier than water was often true, especially in Europe, less so, I think, in this country. But it was a truism that I think everybody pretty much accepted. Fermentation kills nasty little things like E. coli, and they understood imperfectly, I think, the consequences of putting the spring of the well downhill from the cow lot or the pig lot or whatever.
So many of the first immigrants to what would become the United States came from countries where drinking cider instead of water was quite common.
Indeed.
Absolutely.
And there also were other elements of why apples and cider were important in the early years of our country?
Yeah,
well, I think cider became, it was their way of preserving the apples. You know, we think of eating apples as, you know, year-round. You can go to the store and buy apples year-round, but they had no way to do that. Mm-hmm. So it was during harvest only, which was probably a very short time, a matter of a few weeks, that the apples were only edible. So they had to have a way to preserve that, and fermentation was that mm-hmm. method that they used.
Yeah, and in fact, one of the things that I think will come out of this resurgence of proper cider, begging your pardon, Shannon, is a realization that it is a great year-round beverage. Historically, you would tap your best keg 4th of July that you'd harvested the previous fall and fermented over the winter. This notion that somehow cider is strictly a fall beverage, I mean, it's great in the fall, but it's wonderful in the winter, it's marvelous in the spring, and it's heavenly in the summer is what I would say. And, apples, keep in mind, too, that where apples are temperate zone fruit, and where our first settlers are coming from are the northern European regions. So,
but apples did not originate there?
No, apples mm-hmm. originated in what's now Kazakhstan or the Stans, just north of China. They came across the trade routes. The Persians knew apples. The Greeks and the Romans knew apples. But where they really flourished then, they came with the Celts, the Druids, to whom the apple was sacred, into Western Europe, and where proper cider still exists. Asturias, northern Spain, northern France, Normandy, Brittany, and the British Isles.
You're going to add something about American history of apples, aren't you?
Sure.
Well, I think you'll still find, wouldn't you, Shannon, that apples do best here in northwoods. It's rather harder to grow apples in, say, Florida.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, many apples are Middle Eastern states and north would be.
Our guests on this edition of Virginia Insight, Shannon Showalter, co-owner of Showalter's Orchard and Old Hill Hard Cider, based in Timberville, Virginia, plus Charlotte Shelton, co-founder and operating manager of Albemarle Cider Works and Vintage Virginia Apples, based in North Garden, Virginia. You both brought some different varieties of apples and some samples of the proper cider that both of you make. And at some point during the show, we're actually going to risk having the host taste some of this stuff. I'm hoping I can get some of the producers into the talk studio to do some of the taste testing too, since they don't have to drive as far to get home tonight as I do. How quickly can I get buzzed, Shannon Showalter, on drinking hard, proper cider?
Alcoholic content of the ciders we're producing are right around 7%, so they're somewhere between beer and wine.
Do a lot of public speaking about the history of apples and the importance of apples and the developments of ciders over the centuries? What kinds of questions do you get most often about the history of apples or cider?
More what they come at me with is more the cider making part of it. I've been growing apples all my life, but the cider making part of it, how we press the juice, how we do the fermentations, blending.
I think Shannon's coming into this with his background is particularly exciting for Virginia cider. The first cidery in Virginia is from a woman who was in banking, and she did a lot of studying, and she's doing a great job. And we've talked about my background, but Shannon's family has been in orcharding for generations. And the fact, and are serious orchardists. So I think it's particularly exciting that somebody like Shannon is coming along and making the kind of cider he's making, which is quite good.
Well, to you on the other side of your radio, how do you feel about apples? Have you ever thought of them as especially important in our history, in our economy? 888-WMRA Talk is the easy way to remember our number, or if you prefer, 888-967-2825. On Facebook, we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. And on our Facebook page, we have this from Laura, who says, cider, hot cider with a cinnamon stick, won't bother resisting that, especially at this time of year. I would think, Shannon Showalter, that Laura is thinking about what you call sweet cider.
I think that's what she's talking about, yes. And that's one of the things that it's hard for us to let go of that cider term and talk about it as just apple juice. Because
it's really not apple juice.
Well, it's not apple juice.
What about fresh cider for a term?
Well, we can't use fresh anymore because it is a process.
Because you flash pasteurize.
Because it's flash pasteurized.
But
so we can't use the fresh term. And so our product still has to have a name somehow.
Yeah. Well, the fresh cider we sell is not pasteurized.
Right.
That meaning we can only sell it on the farm. You got to come to us. We can't go to you. But
Just differentiate that product from apple juice, mm-hmm. which is a completely different product.
We also have this on our Facebook page from Shirley, who asks, will cider turn hard when it is unopened in a gallon plastic container? Does it need air in order to turn hard, or only time?
Well, there's lots of variables there that come into play. It definitely does not need air unless you want to make vinegar instead of hard cider. But depending on the product that she got and whether it has preservatives or how it's been produced or processed, whether it's been pasteurized. But yes, it will. If it either has wild yeast in it or is re-inoculated with the yeast, it will turn into hard cider.
Yeah. The cider that Shannon makes is a craft, and what he's talking about is the craft of creating a really fine cider. There are yeast all around us, and any organism will ferment, I mm-hmm. suppose, from one point of view, but it's the control of it to produce a really fine cider which is what he's doing and what my brother's doing. I don't actually make the cider at Albemarle Cider Works.
How many brothers do you have?
Three.
Okay. Are they all involved in the family business?
Some more and some less. We're pretty wide apart. Our youngest brother he lives in the D.C. area, and he's a sympathizer and gives us all kinds of advice.
You started your orchard Vintage Virginia Apples in 2000.
We did.
And then you started the Cider Works about 9 years later.
Right. We started collecting apples as a hobby. Now, Shannon's family's been growing lots of apples for generations,
I think. The orchard's been there, we think, 70 to 100 years.
So how many varieties do you grow?
We have approximately 25 varieties on the farm now.
Well, see, that's almost, it's not unique necessarily, but it's highly unusual for a commercial orchard this day and age to have that many varieties. You know, it's easy to stand up and do Michael Pollan one and say, oh, the Philistines have taken over our food system and all we've got is Fuji's and Red Delicious and so forth. But we're 300 million people, and everybody can't grow their own food on their balconies in Manhattan or Omaha. So what we have, we're the beneficiaries as well as the victims of an industrial agricultural system and a mass production distribution system. So that's how we feed all these people. But what we've lost is these little niches.
Mm-hmm. Which is what you and Shannon and our next guest that we're going to talk to after the break are all doing. Little niches that seem to be setting a trend and showing a lot of success. So we're going to talk about more history, but also the future when we get back in just a minute.
When the moon shines on the cow shed,
all I know about that song is it's called I Am a Cider Drinker, and the group's name is the Wurzels. I suspect it's a British group, but
it
I
is.
Don't.
Yeah.
Is it? Okay. Uh-huh. And the only other thing I know about that song is that we play just a clip from the beginning. It gets much too bawdy as it goes on for us to be permitted to play some of what they sing on the radio. But I remember sitting on my grandfather's front porch in the summertime when I was about 4 years old. He would be in his rocking chair sipping what he called hard cider. And every once in a while, when nobody else was around, he'd let me have a sip. Good times. So I'm wondering, to you who are listening, do you have a story about the first time you tasted proper cider? Or maybe there was something about apples and sweet cider that was important in your family. We'd love to hear your story. And it just so happens we have a phone line open for you right now. At 888-WMRA-TALK. If you prefer that in all numbers, it's 888-967-2825. We have with us in studio Shannon Showalter, co-owner of Showalter's Orchard, Charlotte Shelton, co-founder of Albemarle Cider Works, and joining us now by phone is the co-founder of a hard cider-only manufacturing firm. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry, we're going to have to hold on to him for a moment because we have Aaron in Waynesboro who's been waiting on the line. So we're going to keep you in suspense about our next guest for a few moments and let Aaron join in. Aaron in Waynesboro, I'm so sorry that I almost cut you off. Please go ahead with your question or comment.
Well, I have met Shannon and his wife through the orchard given to us by friends who are coffee roasters. And so that's how I came to them and Showalter's and Old Hill Cider. But I started with cider in England on my first trip when I was below the age to drink in the United States and was not a beer drinker. And so my first experience was having a Scrumpy Jack, a half a pint, and then trying to wobble home to where we were staying while we were staying in England with my college with Mary Baldwin on my first trip. But just that, you know, and so I came to love cider through my several trips to England since then, and it was nice to find somewhere around here that had something that was really good and that we enjoyed.
How do you compare the Virginia ciders to your English experience, Aaron?
Strongbow is our favorite. I mean, I started out with the sweet cider and Woodpecker, or, you know, sweet hard cider. Mm-hmm. Woodpecker was the one that I drank my first trip to England, and then my husband and I discovered Strongbow on the subsequent trips.
And are these brand names, Woodpecker and Strongbow?
Yes, mm-hmm. they're brand names over there, and you can get Strongbow over here in the United States.
And we have a little breakup on the line every time you say this. No, it's not your fault, Aaron. It's our technical limitations because the first time I thought I heard you say strong back, but it's strong.
Strongbow, yes.
Mm-hmm. Bow?
Strongbow. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And I mean, the Virginia ciders compare very favorably to that, to the point where we're no longer searching for kegs of Strongbow anymore, because we have local cider that we can drink that's wonderful.
That's great.
So I think they compare very favorably.
Great. It's always fun to have people coming in that either are from the UK or have traveled and tried those products, and I hope to get over there soon and find out what cider is all about in England.
There's a revival of craft cider in England. There's a book, James Croden. Now, I can't think of the title, but in any event, a couple years ago, that this Back to the Land movement we're seeing here of young people going back to start their own farms or orchards or whatever, it's happening. It's an international phenomenon. This West Country, the Southern England, traditional cider growing regions that's having revival there. I'd like to try some of those.
So, Aaron, I'm curious, how do you these days differentiate between cider that has alcohol in it and cider that does not? Do you have names for them?
I guess we still call it cider, but I guess we usually say hard cider.
Okay.
Hard cider versus just plain cider. It's probably what we use most often.
Well, that's good to know, because we want to hear from as many people as possible who drink any kind of cider, how they feel about it and what they call it, and whether they want to know more about its history. But we sure are glad that you started this off. Have a terrific rest of the day.
Cider, the one thing that was really awesome about Showalters last year was when they did their cider night and had a night where there were people telling stories about their family farms and stories just from the area, and had cider and food and everything. That was just a really neat way to kind of get a little more history about it. And just, it felt like a barn, not a barn dance, but, you know, just a group of people getting together to talk about it. And it was a really neat experience.
That was a great event. I think what she's talking about is stories betwixt the music. We have a cider that's called Betwixt. The name is Betwixt. Sarah came up with through working in the tasting room and gathering all these stories that people would come in and tell. And she, I think, coined them as cider lore, put together this event. And basically we just invited people to come in, tell some stories, drink some cider. We would mix that up with some music. I had some local musicians come in and play and just had a really good time.
Aaron, thank you so very much for your call. Well, joining us now by phone is the co-founder of a hard cider-only manufacturing firm based in Free Union, Virginia. It's now in its third year of operation. It's called Potter's Craft Cider. Tim Edmond, welcome to Virginia Insight.
Thank you. Glad to be on the program.
At some point, we're going to have to ask how you managed to start out with a microbrewery operation making beer back when you were still too young legally to taste this stuff. But before we get to that, Tim, this company that you and your partner started up not that long ago, Potter's Craft Cider, how come cider? Well, what did you know about the market for it that apparently many of the rest of us did not?
You know, we were beer guys. My business partner, Dan Potter, and I, we went to college together, and we kind of formed a friendship around homebrewing beer and kind of mirroring the revival of the craft beer. You saw a lot of folks brewing beer at home. And we, you know, as we got into brewing beer as homebrewers, we were kind of exploring a lot of these new flavor profiles that we hadn't tried on the shelves in the store. And, you know, that was kind of our nature. It was kind of our, what got us into brewing beer was just trying new things, exploring new flavors. And then just kind of happenstance, Dan brewed a batch of cider. Well, in fact, he had pressed some sweet cider. He at that time was working on a farm in Richmond called Tuckahoe Plantation, and they were doing grass-fed beef and chicken, and they ended up bringing some sweet cider to sell at farmers markets with them. And after, you know, as a home brewer would, you know, we will ferment anything that's made out of liquid and has any sugar in it. You know, he made a batch of this hard cider, and we tried it, and, you know, I'd never been exposed to a cider that kind of was on the drier side and made with real cider apples. And it was kind of this eye-opener from the very beginning. You know, what was exciting to us about the category was that, you know, the commercial examples that we had tried, we were not very interested in. And in the same way, there were all these flavor profiles in beer that we felt like were undiscovered, and it was kind of the allure of the homebrewer. In cider, the only commercial examples that we had tried, we weren't in love with. So, yeah.
You know, Tim, something really important there, I think, for what we're doing in the future of cider. This is Charlotte. Shannon here, when his group came on, this is really exciting. Dan came up, I know, about the time you're talking about, to see us. Finding the right apples is what makes the difference in a really fine cider. Erin just recently mentioned that she really liked what we were doing. What Shannon has is these 25 varieties, not all of which I'm sure are very good for cider.
Sure. But some of them are. Yes.
Exactly. And they are growing. We've put in 250 varieties in the ground. Now, you can't grow an orchard too effectively that way, but we are exploring what are these old cider apples that virtually disappeared after the middle of the 19th century when people started eating their apples instead of drinking them. But how much of a tradition continued in the valley? I'd like to hear you talk about that.
With the hard cider, it didn't, you know, I remember back 15, 20 years ago, and actually the farmhouse style ciders were pretty popular then. There were a lot of people that came in and bought bulk juice from us and would take it home.
And a farmhouse style cider, is that sweet cider or is that
no,
with
that, alcohol? That's hard cider. Okay. That would be hard
cider. And that's what Tim and Dan call theirs, isn't it, Tim?
That's right. That's one of our ciders, yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so. So there was it was pretty popular as I grew up as a kid. I remember, and actually it was a lot, actual farmers would come in, sometimes even bring their own apples in or buy juice and take it back with them and ferment it into a.
Did they specify the varieties that they wanted
to
have?
Yeah, it was to some point. It was different than the stuff that we blend our, you know, our sweet cider is actually made in a craft style. We do blending with that as well. But, typically they were made out of stamen and wine sap apples.
Uh-huh. Wine sap is great. Yeah. We have
interesting that you mentioned stamen, because we just got this on our Facebook page from Anna, who says, I grew up near Romney, West Virginia, and have been a fan of apples and cider for as long as I can remember. My dad has an old press that we used to run every fall, turning stamens, Yorks, and other old varieties into cider, some of which we let turn.
Yeah.
I guess that's a term that you guys know.
Sure.
She also says, I love finding the unpasteurized and flash pasteurized cider to create that slightly spicy cigar. Maybe she meant cider. Cigar's not a cider term, is it?
No, that I know of.
All right, so let's say she meant to write
but
cider.
But turn is. Turn means turn. It's fermenting.
It's starting to ferment. And
Anna
a lot of
also says, I also love the resurgence of cider as an adult beverage and being able to find locally produced brands. And she may well be talking about any of you, including you there in Western Albemarle County, Tim Edmond.
Yeah, you know, it's really cool to see, you know, when we go out, a lot of what we're doing now is education. You know, it is resurging. We've seen the category come back, but we're kind of bridging together memories from, you know, folks and their parents and kind of the generations of folks who have lived around apples for a long time. It's natural that those folks know what cider is and they know what hard cider is. But kind of connecting all of these, you know, all of these different stories and all of what people currently know about apples and about cider and going out into the marketplace, you know, we'll go out and do a tasting, you know, let's say at a Whole Foods, and it's amazing. You know, we're tasting hard cider. It's pretty well marked, but I would say maybe 90% of the people that come up and do a tasting, you know, they're unfamiliar, not just with our cider, but with hard cider in general. And, you know, there's a lot of kind of discussion around, like, well, what is hard cider? What is the difference between hard cider and sweet cider? And that's kind of the starting point. And then from there, you know, we get into, you know, well, what is dry cider? What is craft cider? You know, what is it that we're really seeing start to happen in Virginia? And as Charlotte was saying, you know, what are ciders that are made with these traditional cider apples and how do they differ?
Well, the evolution of apples and cider is our focus on Virginia Insight today. And to you listening, we're wondering if you've got a question that you have about a topic you've not yet heard addressed, a story of your own that you'd be willing to share. By phone, we are at 888-WMRA-TALK. On Facebook, it's WMRA's Virginia Insight. Am I correct, Charlotte Shelton from Albemarle Cider Works, that this confusion over sweet cider versus cider with alcohol in it didn't really start until around the 1930s. Up until then, cider was hard cider?
It was hard cider into the middle of the 19th century, and even later, and of course, as Shannon has just said, further than that. But keep in mind what's going on in the 19th century. Huge changes in this country. In 1800, 96% of Americans are farmers. 1900, it's 43%. It's about 5% now. The immigration that's coming into the country, which is industrializing. You got railroads coming in the
mid-century. In the late 19th century.
Yeah.
Right.
And then all of that, more and more people are living in cities. It wasn't a shelf-stable product, I think, back in the 19th century. So you had
of these orchards that were throughout the 1700s and 1800s growing apples that were
primarily for cider.
For cider.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
This was slowly changing to provide apples that were sweet enough for people to eat.
For dessert. You had
dessert quality apples, yes.
Yeah, dessert quality apples. You had people who were shipping them to New York, and they were served in fine restaurants in boxes tied in bows, I'm told, in the 1890s, for example.
And part of the backstory here to understand what mm-hmm. goes on is that you can't just decide to grow an orchard overnight.
Indeed.
If you decide to take a piece of land, Shannon, and turn it into an apple orchard, whether for apples to eat or apples to make cider, it takes how long from the beginning phase until you've got apples coming off those trees?
That's about a 5 to 10 year process, depending on if you're revitalizing an old orchard, which would be pushing out trees, which is something we're doing now on the farm. You're looking at least 5 to 10 years to get back into production.
Yeah.
And so when in the 1920s Prohibition went into effect, you could no longer legally sell hard cider.
They cut down many of those the cider tree orchards.
And it had started earlier in that, Tom, to go back. The temperance movement gets underway in the New England area in the 1820s. It was one of three huge reform movements in the 19th century. We think of abolition of slavery as being the most important. Maybe it was. Rights for women, which culminates in women's suffrage in the 20s. But the temperance movement morphs into prohibition over a century-long period. And so during that period, you've got people cutting down apple orchards as the wages of sin and things like that. And so,
but certainly it was wholesale at the point where you could no longer use those apples coming from orchards that had been designed specifically varieties to create an alcoholic cider. That in the 1920s, those all but disappeared.
That's right.
And
yeah.
So mm-hmm. Prohibition ends in the 1930s. Shannon Showalter, and what happens?
beer comes back strong mm-hmm. because it was much quicker to get back on the market. You can grow a field of barley in one season, and when they had to replant the trees or the orchards, mm-hmm. it took much longer.
Yeah. And when they did replant orchards for apples, they mostly were not apples to be turned into cider.
Right, that's right. They were more dessert-quality apples. For processing into applesauce or for fresh eating.
Well, we're going to hit the break here in just a few moments. And Tim Edmond, before you go, I want you to tell us what you see as the future of cider, at least what you can sum up in about 30 seconds.
You bet. I think what we've seen developing so far is that, there are so many varieties of apples, specifically in Virginia, and the types of ciders that can be made. I mean, the three of us that are on the phone is a good representative sample of what's happening in the movement. If you taste across our portfolios of cider, you're going to get diverse and different ciders, and it's really exciting to kind of explore within the category. So to the extent there continue to be new producers using different varieties and different blends of fruit, which there are, endless iterations of how many different ciders you can create, you're going to continue to get this depth of flavor and these new flavor and aroma categories. And that's what's really exciting about this movement is that, we're making new things. We're using new apples, new to us, and I'm not sure if they're new in history. But we're creating drinks that are each, they each stand out and they stand alone.
Tim, I'm so sorry we're about to hit the break, but I do want to thank you. Tim Edmond is co-founder of Potter's Craft Cider, now found in bottles and on draft at locations throughout Central and Western Virginia. Tim, thanks so much for your time and continued success to you.
Thank you.
We'll be back in just a bit more than 1 minute. AAA WMRA Talk is the easy way to remember the Virginia Insight phone number. Any chance you remember when you first heard the song, Here Comes Johnny Appleseed? Did you have stories taught about him in school? Want to share any of those memories with us? By phone, 888-967-2825. On Facebook, we are at WMRA's Virginia Insight. Here in the Insight Studio, co-founder of North Garden, Virginia-based Vintage Virginia Apples, as well as Albemarle Cider Works, Charlotte Shelton. plus co-owner of Timberville, Virginia-based Showalter's Orchard and Old Hill Hard Cider, Shannon Showalter. And now, from Harrisonburg, we've got Joe on the phone line. Joe, my name, by the way, is Tom Graham. I'm so glad you called. Your question or comment, please.
Yeah. Hello. I've always used to enjoy a little bit of cider in the fall, having lived in along Lake Champlain, which is a major apple-producing area. I've heard, and I might be wrong, so you can correct me, but I've heard that imports, particularly from China, are making a big dent in the production of apple juice in the United States.
That's correct. Yeah, would be apple juice.
And maybe apple sauce. And I guess the Chinese just want to undersell Americans and anything Americans buy, from the sounds of it. But I wanted to know also then if they are going after the cider market or if there's some reason that they can't or don't.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's going to affect the craft cider market. I think what you're talking about is that they're primarily shipping concentrate in, which affects the big producers of the apple juice, and also the larger growers. The market for processing apples have.
Yeah. Up to this point, I'm told that the Chinese prefer liquor with their meals rather than wine even. And so it'll be a while before they get to cider. But this ties in with something else. You know, when you get over and over this question of why didn't cider come back? And as Shannon said, it was much quicker and cheaper to produce a beer. But if you think about it, wine didn't come back either immediately. I think that cider now, and one reason that we're so excited about its growth is it's a beneficiary of a broadening awareness of food and its variety. And I trace it back to Julia Child. I mean, I remember my mother coming home in the 50s with a radical new recipe. Nobody had ever heard of it in Central Virginia. It was spaghetti. Okay, we laugh at that now, but our food is just so much more varied. And cider is the cider that Shannon and Tim and my brother makes is a wonderfully food-friendly beverage. So that's something to consider too.
Yeah, we're finding that people do want to come out to the farm, see where their food's raised and their beverages mm-hmm. come from. So
yeah.
That movement.
Joe, thank you so very much for your call. We've got another call coming in from Harrisonburg. This is Mike. Mike, thanks for joining us. Your question and comment, please, for Shannon Showalter and or Charlotte Shelton.
Yeah, just a bit of history first. 40 years ago, my wife and I lived over in Nelson County, and one year we rented an orchard that had been, let go, and wishogged it, and got about 52 barrels, of cider out of there, and sold a lot of it, and then next spring, a couple of them that were not sold got what back then, I don't know if you still do it now, called Blue Hard.
That's a new one to me.
Well, it's the high alcohol content.
Okay.
It's no more sweetness left in it.
Okay.
It's high alcohol.
Do you have any idea how high a content it is?
Well, not the cider itself, but going on, my friend had a little, let's call it a medicinal still. It held about, 5 gallons of cider.
Well, Shannon Showalter, it's my understanding that, as Charlotte calls it, proper cider with alcohol, sold in the U.S., generally ranges between 5 and 10% in alcohol content?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right.
And is that similar to wine?
I know wine's usually up 10 and above, or 11
12 to 14,
12 to 14
around
here.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mike, you had a happy experience making cider, is what I'm getting from your story.
Yeah, well, we had a lot of good cider along the route to turning Blue Hard. And then I don't know if it's a question. Well, maybe it is a question. It'd be nice if there's any plans to, we have microbreweries now. I'm telling you, that distilled cider was just fine. Back in that day, doctors up at the University of Virginia, there were some fellows, not me, but who did this commercially, would make a little two gallon uh, oak barrels, you know, little tiny barrels, and put this cider in it, sell it for $200. Now, that was back in late, well, 60s, 70s. And, but it was because it was such a fine product.
Mike, you're getting to a question, I can tell.
Yeah, well, is there any plans to have any kind of thing like microbreweries, micro distilleries?
There are a lot of craft distilleries coming on in Virginia as well. I'm not sure. Actually, I've been approached by a few guys that are looking to make some apple brandy or something that way. So possibly, yes.
Right. And then there's a fellow near Charlottesville who's doing that with pears. Now, it's an aquavit. Right. It's not quite as high as the brandy that I think you're talking about. But, no, there's a lot of intrigue there.
Yeah,
from
our standpoint.
We're going to run short on time here, and I really want to get to the taste testing because, you know, I'm here, and apparently I'm the one who has to test, so I want to do my duty. But I do want to thank Mike for calling, and we have this on, and if you guys want to get the bottles ready,
sure.
that's fine. On our Facebook page from Brittany, who says, the cider that I try in Virginia is more like an apple wine. Do you know a place to lean on making cider? I'm not sure what she means by that. Maybe a place where you find a cider that doesn't taste quite like wine?
Well, cider is to apples what wine is to grapes. Cider is to apples what wine is to grapes, what perry is to pears. It is technically and legally a fruit wine. So
yeah, that's our licensure. We're licensed as a farm winery.
Exactly.
And it's much wine-like in its making.
When she says that what she's been tasting tastes like apple wine, is there cider that doesn't taste like apple wine?
Well, she's probably has tasted a lot of the drier ciders, some of the micro ciders that are going more after the beer market tend to be much sweeter, much more apple juice flavored, if you will.
You're doing the prep there, aren't you?
Yeah,
yes, we're trying to get the bottles open.
Pass a glass.
I'm not sure. I mean, there are certainly plenty of ciders around. I'm not sure what she's after. There's also there's some brewers now that are making some beers that are apple flavored. So there's lots of confusion about the cider.
It's a wide open category. Some people making cider are putting other fruit flavors in it: raspberry, blueberry, pomegranate, even. According to the TTB, the federal cider is apple juice with nothing added, or pear juice, which is technically a perry.
Okay, I got to tell you, I've got this flashback going on. You just opened this, and which cider is this that you poured?
This is Jupiter's Legacy. It's our flagship cider. It has about 30 varieties of apples in it. All of our best cider apples. We're experimenting with trying to revive these traditional American cider varieties.
If I suddenly get tears in my eyes, I got to tell you, it's so funny that it comes right while we were discussing Brittany's question about her cider experience more like apple wine. As soon as you handed this to me, Charlotte, I remembered being on that front porch with my great-grandfather. And what I remembered, the taste didn't taste anything like what I would think apple wine would be. So Jupiter's Legacy is what I'm smelling. It's just so beautiful. And it has what kind of apples in it?
Well, there are 30 different kinds. Harrison, Virginia Hughes Crab. These are apples most people never heard of. But all of our russets, our Ashmead's Kernel, which is an old English apple, Roxbury Russet, this year, I think it has some pippin in it, Arkansas Black.
Okay, so Shannon, do you want to taste this? Do you want me to taste this?
Oh, go ahead.
All right. I may start to cry. Oh, that's wonderful. Could I just take the bottle and chug it? No, I won't do that, but. All right. You have some over there, Shannon.
Sure.
And by the way, we still have phone lines open. One of the reasons that we're talking about apples and cider on Virginia Insight is not because there's such rich history associated with our country, some of which we still have to discuss,
But also because, as has been demonstrated by some of the calls in the Facebook posts already, is that people have memories of their experiences, their friends and family gathered over cider. And we love hearing those kinds of stories. So if you've got a story to tell, we've got a couple more minutes to hear it at 888-WMRA-TALK. Which one we got here,
okay,
Shannon?
I poured Betwixt for you. It's a little sweeter. Just a little bit of residual sweetness.
And this is called Betwixt.
It's called Betwixt.
And this is from Showalter's Orchard. Well, actually, it's Old Hill Hard Cider is the name of it.
That's right, yeah.
Okay.
Gives you a little more fresh apple flavor with that one with a little residual sugar.
That is.
So a little fresher.
It's like a very sweet wine. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know that I taste apples in that at all.
Yeah. Do you taste grapes when you drink wine?
Not always.
All right. No, it's a point.
Okay. But before I totally fade away from the microphone, you've got one other
I did
there?
Pour you one more. This is an ice style cider, which is
ice style.
Yeah, so if you've ever had German ice, it's a dessert style. It's very sweet, something you would have after dinner as a dessert.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if it's because my sense of smell fades after a while, but what I notice here, Charlotte Shelton, is that first cider that you handed me, the aroma mm-hmm. was so strong, it almost mm-hmm. knocked me over, and it brought back all those memories. Now I'm smelling each glass, and it's got a pleasant aroma, mm-hmm. but it isn't nearly as powerful.
Right.
Is that because my sense of smell is changing? Or because
it could be. It's made in a different process.
Oh, my goodness. That tastes like some sort of dessert wine.
Yeah, that's absolutely. That's what it is.
And what's it called again?
That's called Season's Finish.
Okay, you've got me sold.
that's been one of the fun things about what we're doing. I think Tim alluded to educating people about it, but most of the people that come in are excited to learn about it, but they have no idea what to expect. And there's so many different products
over and
out
over
there.
Again. Yeah. That's yeah. exactly our experience so, too.
Yeah. Yeah, if you like me, who are listening, have some family stories associated with drinking cider, you're going to have a wonderful time tasting any of this stuff. And if you've never tasted cider with alcohol in it, I would think that just based on the three I just tasted, you would really have a wonderful time, whether you got family stories or not. We've got time for one more call, so we're going to go to Afton. This is Taylor. Taylor, thank you so much for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment, please.
Yeah, hey, guys. I just had a comment. I was driving, and I heard the story. And I'm actually a brewmaster for Blue Mountain and have a love for cider as well. And as a longtime Virginian, I've been drinking sweet cider and hard cider my whole life. And I was lucky enough to go to a cider pressing party about 2 weeks ago where we had, a pickup truck full of apples and a 150-year-old press, and we juiced it, and everyone pitched in some money and took home some cider. And I'm actually fermenting some with some of my brewer's yeast right now. Love Albemarle Cider Works. I'm actually planning a Thanksgiving trip with out-of-town relatives to go there. So just wanted to say I appreciate what you guys do, and I think it's a great part of the heritage of Virginia.
Are you guys becoming a vacation destination?
Yeah, I think so. Our tasting room is just 8 miles south of Charlottesville. It's on Route 29. It's very accessible. We have people who come to picnic there.
In North Garden?
In North Garden, yeah.
Yeah, we're finding mm-hmm. Our customer base is definitely changing a lot since we've added the hard cider part of mm-hmm. it.
Yeah, we have a guest house there, too. We have people coming in from Northern Virginia and spending the weekend. We're right there in the middle of the Monticello Appalachian. There are a dozen or so wineries around there, but we're different, and so it's kind of a relief, and I think you'll find that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, we have some wineries popping up close to us, too, and it is nice to have an alternative for them to go mm-hmm. to.
Tim and Afton, do you mind my asking how old you are, or if you could give us an age range?
I'm 38 years old.
And do you recall when you first started drinking what Charlotte calls proper cider, cider with alcohol in it?
He's going to incriminate himself, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. No, we have a long-time family tradition. I grew up in Lynchburg, and we went on something called Tree Day out in Amherst County, and we always went wassailing beforehand, which means we basically drank hard cider in a field before we cut down Christmas trees, and I was probably getting little nips when I was 14 or 15 years old.
So proper cider has been something that's been in your life since before you became a legal adult.
Yes, and before I became a professional alcohol maker.
But now these days, it sounds like part of what you have a special sense of joy in doing is introducing other people to cider.
Yeah, I do. Even though people think I'm only interested in beer, I'm very proud of Virginia, and I think it's such a great part of our heritage, and I love seeing all the cideries pop up around here. I just think it's really special, and it's something Virginians can be proud of as indigenous.
Taylor, thanks so much for your call. I apologize to those who are still on the line that we were not able to get to your call, but we'll see if you hold on, if our guests can talk to you a little bit once we go off the air. Right now, I have to note that our guests have been Shannon Showalter, co-owner of Showalter's Orchard and Old Hill Hard Cider, based in Timberville, Virginia; Charlotte Shelton, co-founder and operating manager of Albemarle Cider Works and Vintage Virginia Apples, based in North Garden, Virginia; plus earlier in the broadcast, co-owner of Free Union Virginia-based Potter's Craft Cider, Tim Edmond. Thank you all so much for making time for us.
Lovely being here. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
I have to have you back so we can taste those apples that you brought. Virginia Insights executive producer is Matt Bingay. Associate producers Terry Ward and Bob Levicky. Some of our break music supplied by Robert Juspe and Inner Rhythm. You can find postings of Virginia Insight on the Virginia Insight page at WMRA.org. When you get to that page, you will find links to more information about the work each of our guests are doing. And if you go to the Virginia Insight page and Insight Facebook page, I had too much cider. Well, you get to the Facebook page, you click like, you get a whole bunch more information about these broadcasts there as well. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Gray. I hope we can get together again soon for more Insight.